And good morning. It was only 21 degrees at the lowest point this morning, so if you like cold air, it's going to be your day. I came across this article that I find, to me, it's just very, very intriguing. And that doesn't mean it's going to be intriguing or interesting to you, but, you know, I like understanding how things work. And I always appreciate someone that can simplify all the different issues that we're going through. So I came across a... It says, this article was excerpted from the book, and this is the title of the book. I'm going to read it to you. Mastering the Addicted Brain. Copyright 2017 by Walter Ling, and is printed with permission from New York World Library, www.newworldlibrary.com. The article, written by Dr. Ling, is Why Do People Take Drugs? And just underneath it, he introduced me to two words that it really, I don't know that I really thought about them a whole lot. And the subtitle is Embracing Hedonia or Eudaimonia. And I really think the word hedonia refers to being hedonistic or being a hedon. Anyway, I want to read this article to you from Dr. Ling, and I want it to be for your... consideration, please. You know, the truth is I'm probably reading it for myself because, man, I just love information like this. Anyway, let me run this past you, and I'll try. It won't take me too long to get through it, and then we'll go ahead and take phone calls, and I'd love to help you today. Just anything I can do. This program is called Health Essentials. The phone number here at the station is area code 903-586-5257, just in case you wanted to write that down. I'll take calls in just a brief moment. And so this article from Dr. Walter Ling, MD, Why Do People Take Drugs? Here we go. We have information about how the brain works, how drugs affect the brain, and how the brain becomes addicted and stays addicted as it learns and incorporates drug experiences into memory. And its reward circuitry overwhelms rational inhibitions. Now let's ask perhaps the most important question of all. Why do people take drugs in the first place? Alan Leshner, former director of the National Institutes on Drug Abuse, puts it simply, and I quote, "People who take drugs to feel good or to feel better, that's the reason they take them." In other words, people take drugs because they like how the drugs make them feel. Since we all want to feel good and we all want to feel better, when we do not feel good, well, what's wrong with that? Nothing, really. There's nothing wrong with wanting to feel good and to be happy. After all, America's founding fathers put the pursuit of happiness, along with life and liberty, into the Declaration of Independence as one of our inalienable rights. Well, what's the big fuss if people take drugs in pursuit of happiness? Well, there are a few problems with that. One is that the good time from drugs can become addicting. And being addicted is not a happy place. An addict doesn't do drugs to pursue happiness, but out of compulsion. Also, and more important, the happiness that people feel on drugs isn't the happiness that the founding fathers were talking about. The happiness referred to in the Declaration of Independence is related to a virtue. It's the kind of happiness that you experience from becoming the person that you want to be and from engaging in meaningful, productive activities that help other people and your family. In other words, the founding fathers meant the satisfaction of a successful life, feeling good from having done good, not pursuing personal pleasure for its own sake. These two types of happiness are entirely different. And this is maybe, folks, the part that I really am paying attention to. They have different names. They involve different brain mechanisms, and they have very, very different effects on your health. So first, the first definition here. Pleasure for its own sake, having a good time, without any other meaning or purpose and benefiting only oneself, is called hedonia. I guess that's where we get the word hedonistic, or being a hedon. This type of happiness creates a physiological response that is similar to what happens when the body is under stress. Excitement is accompanied by increases in blood pressure, respiration, that means you're breathing probably faster and more shallowly, your blood sugar goes up, and stress hormones, they go up too. And guess what it also does? Pleasure for its own sake, just having a good time without any other meaning or purpose, benefiting only oneself. That's the word he introduced me to, hedonia. It decreases your immune responses. Basically, you're wrecking your immune system. As with stress, too much of this kind of happiness can make you sick, which is the price you pay for the good time. Isn't that interesting? The other kind of happiness, which is feeling good from a sense of personal satisfaction, from helping one's community and others through meaningful actions, is called eudaimonia. That's spelled E-U-D-E-M-O-N-I-A. And I could be pronouncing it wrong, but I'm going to call it eudaimonia. The physiological responses that accompany this feeling are the opposite of hedonia. Blood pressure, respiration, your blood sugar, and stress hormones, they all decrease. And all the immune response hormones, they all increase, which is what you want. In other words, when you participate in eudaimonia, which is living a purposeful life of satisfaction and accomplishment, you get healthier. Is it any mistake that people that have a purpose-focused life can have amazing health well into old age sometimes? You may not be surprised to learn that these two types of happiness involve different parts of the brain. Hedonia, or personal pleasure, is antithetical to reflection. As the limbic's brain reward centers overwhelm the rational cortical brain, the part of our brain that makes us uniquely human. On the other hand, eudaimonia, which is good pleasure, it emerges from self-reflection and self-awareness, and it requires the highest level of cortical brain function. In a way, with eudaimonia, we feel good about precisely what makes us uniquely human, such as being a good worker, or a good friend, or a good parent. That is what feeling good about yourself is all about. And I'm interjecting here. I had a conversation with my son yesterday, and he was saying he was reading a study, an internet article, most likely knowing him, that if you have men that have the least amount of depression, they have jobs, they have wives, and they're involved in church. Now, I'm not trying to say that those are guarantees, but it sure helps to understand yourself, doesn't it? Dr. Walter Lean goes on to reflect and say, think back on specific times when you have felt happy, when you have felt hedonia, or personal pleasure, and when you have felt eudaimonia, or happiness because of who you are. It's been said that eudaimonia is the kind of happiness that you want to tell your grandchildren about. What moments of happiness in your life would you want to share with your grandchildren? So why do people do drugs? They seek hedonia, to feel good. And if they become addicted, they get stuck to seeking hedonia, and they pay dearly for it. For addiction undermines feelings of eudaimonia, or feeling good about the person you are. So the next question is, why don't or can't people stop taking drugs? This discussion of happiness begs the question, if someone isn't happy taking drugs, well, why don't they just stop? Indeed, if someone can voluntarily stop taking drugs whenever they want, and for however long they want, and they don't suffer mentally or physically after stopping, then almost by definition, they're not addicted. The correct and the more accurate question is, why can't people just stop taking drugs when they want to? Many addicts do, in fact, want to stop taking drugs, but they can't. Addicted persons simply, or they cannot simply stop taking drugs because their addicted brains compel them to act like addicts. Their brain chemistry has changed. And the addict is literally not the same person they were before. For them, starting and stopping drug use is not like opening and closing a window. It is more like they have opened a bottle of soda. What's inside has become different. They just can't put the cap back on it and expect what's inside to return the way it was before. Furthermore, becoming addicted is not the same as staying addicted. When a person first chooses to do drugs, the drug's effects and reward-driven learning reinforce the desire to repeat the drug experience. Early on, people often just justify by giving in to their desire to do drugs again by telling themselves they can stop whenever they want to. But in fact, continuing to do drugs steadily changes the brain so that it's harder to say no. Maybe that's what sin is like for us. The more that we participate in it willingly, the harder it is to stop. But in fact, continuing to do drugs steadily changes their brain so that it's harder to say no. Being unable to stop, for example, relapsing even after going through detox, has more to do with how repetition has reinforced drug memories. To put this another way, someone becomes addicted because of the drug effects, but the person stays addicted because they remember those effects with a changed brain. Likewise, getting off drugs is not the same as staying off drugs. Getting off drugs, detoxification, focuses on ridding the body of the drug effects. Staying off drugs, which is relapse prevention, it involves replacing drug memories with non-drug memories. I think this is fascinating, folks. This only happens by doing non-drug things over and over and over to build up a bank of non-drug memories. Over time, the brain develops a foundation of non-drug experiences, beliefs, and values that help the person make non-addictive choices. Overcoming addiction is mostly about staying off drugs or relapse prevention. This is where we must direct every effort, and it's what the bulk of my new book is about. In the end, we can sum up overcoming addiction in one sentence. It replaces the search for hedonistic happiness with the effort to attain eudaimonic happiness. I found that interesting, folks. That's from Dr. Walter Ling, and he's the author of a book, Mastering the Addicted Brain. I find it very interesting. I remember the story of the reporter that sat outside of Thomas Edison's either home or apartment for 3 weeks running, maybe even a day beyond that. And he had the sole purpose of obtaining an interview with Thomas Edison. Now, I realize when I say the name Thomas Edison, he's got to be one of the most famous inventors of all time. He probably has well over 1,000 individual, unique, incredible patents to his name that he has been able to successfully file and receive a U.S. patent for. Well, the reporter, once he got the interview with Thomas Edison, he said, "What is the secret of your success?" And Thomas Edison says, let's just say that a man goes to bed at 11 o'clock at night and he wakes up at 7 o'clock in the morning. Then for the rest of the day, he has approximately 16 really good hours that he can do something productive. And Thomas Edison went on to say that while a good many of the people that live here on Earth, they use those 16 hours and doing a little bit of this and a little bit of that, they do many, many things. And no doubt many of those things are very good things and very purposeful things and essential things to maintaining a household and raising kids and going to work and, you know, all the different things that we could fit into that 16 hours. But Thomas Edison says, what I do is I use all my mental and my emotional and physical energy just working on one thing. My focus is only on one thing, the one thing. And that's why I'm so successful, because I can marshal all my energy into that direction. And you know what? I think that's a fabulous story about Thomas Edison. But you know, sometimes restoring your health is just about doing very simple things, but you're trying to replace maybe bad behaviors with good behaviors over and over and over again until you can change your brain chemistry. What is the reward for you drinking water every day? Let's just say that you have purposed in your heart that you need to improve your consumption of water. I am not saying this because of the young lady I saw yesterday either. It's just water is essential to life. It just is. But what if you purpose that the first thing that you will do, maybe after going to the restroom, is you will drink a glass of water to start your day with? Could that actually influence your body chemistry in a positive way? Could it help you to be more productive? Could you actually manage stress better? Could your joints and muscles and your bones, could they feel better from that? Could you have better brain function? Is it possible that you could be a little bit happier throughout the day by drinking that glass of water? Is it easier for your heart to push blood through the arteries when the blood is super thick? Or when the blood has water in it, it's flowing at the right consistency? Well, you know the answer to that. Does your digestive tract require water to process food? Of course. I could probably sum it all up by saying, every good chemical reaction that takes place within your cells, it only takes place in the medium or within water. You know, a biologist once said that that's all a cell is just a big bag of water that does stuff. Well, yeah. So what if you set your mind like Flint that you're going to participate in an action or a behavior that helps you? Well, I mean, you can look me in the eye and tell me you don't like drinking water. You don't want to drink water. And what you really prefer is Coca-Cola, but that's just not the same thing. Let's go ahead and go to the phone lines. Good morning and welcome to the program. How are you?
Hi, am I on the air?
Yes, you are now.
Okay, well, let me get this radio off my head here. Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
I'm envisioning a very large radio sitting on top of your head. It's a balancing act, right?
Yeah, it is a great big one.
No, I'm glad for your call. How can I help today?
That's pretty funny. I had a comment and made a question too. First of all, we're in a constant spiritual warfare with Satan. His three main goals are kill, steal, and destroy. And as he mounts that horrible spiritual attack on everyone who is unfortunate enough to experiment with drugs, let's say.
Well, it's not just drugs. It's just anything that your attention would be drawn to that's away from Christ, right?
Yes. He's after that. That's his goal.
Oh, I agree with you. I really think I see it more clearly than what I used to. But the enemy is just right there.
Yeah.
He is there. You have got to be prepared for battle.
Yes. One pastor told me, he said, I will hear a voice in my right ear telling me things. And he said, it's amazing that Satan can make it sound like my own voice.
Oh,
it's me talking to myself.
Do you know what?
That's,
You know what really impresses me about 1 Corinthians, I think it's chapter 10, when it talks about when you're tempted. The one word that I think that I'm choosing to focus on when I read that is the word flee.
Yes, and so I kind of
think if I hear that voice in my head to maybe think about something or participate in something that I shouldn't, I'm thinking I need to get my brain to get in touch with my feet and force me to run. Well, isn't that how Joseph saved himself with Potiphar's wife? He ran.
He got out of there.
Yeah, and evidently she had a firm grip on his clothing. Well, you tell me, did he make a good decision?
Oh, wonderful, yes.
God, go ahead.
God was right with him on that. I was going to say, I had a one-time drug experience in my lifetime, and it happened in the chair of a dentist who gave me the gas.
Nitrous.
The name is called nitrous oxide.
Yeah, uh-huh. Okay. Laughing gas.
Yes, right. Yeah, laughing gas. That's what I call it. Well, he said, this is going to be a bad procedure. It was a root canal and all this horrible stuff. He said, I'm going to give you gas. And he did. And I literally, for maybe an hour, I don't know how long, it didn't seem all that long, but I was flying all over Tyler, Texas. I had this jet pack, and I could zoom up and zoom down, and I was just flying. I think I saw
you on Gilligan's Island that one time, filling in for Gilligan with a jet pack.
But, man, I flew, and I flew, and all of a sudden, there's somebody shaking me saying, wake up, wake up. And I'm saying, no, I'm still flying. Leave me alone.
Oh, man. Was that powerful?
But here's the powerful thing about it. That was one time, a one-time shot. But I left that dentist's office that day thinking, how could I possibly have another root canal someday so I could do that again?
You know, well, I never thought that you were going to say that. I thought you were going to say something else.
No.
You see how I predetermined that you were going to make a different comment? But what you said was, how can I need another root canal so I can experience that again?
Mm-hmm. You know, it was like...
Do you know that article that I just read? This is, and I'll summarize it real quick for you. But it says when you have experience like you did, that causes your blood pressure to go up. Your breathing becomes more labored and difficult. It wrecks your immune system. You release stress hormones. Basically, that type of pleasure destroys you. It does not make you better.
Right, and it's these horrible these young people who are driven into what they choose to do by peer pressures. It's just, I've got one question for myself. I take a drug called Aircept. Aircept. And it's to help, retard this, development of dementia or Alzheimer's, because my memory is I run around this house. If a certain procedure has five things to do to get it done, I'll do four of them or three of them, but then I get distracted and I don't get those five things done, and then I come back later and say, well, I wonder why I didn't finish this up, and something like that.
Well, Aricept does one thing, is trying to increase acetylcholine levels.
Okay, acetylcholine. Is that by any chance in mustard?
No, but turmeric is, and so what you have when you consume French's yellow mustard or Grey Poupon, you're getting curcumin or turmeric, and that has a very strong anti-inflammatory effect toward the brain.
Okay. Depending on how much I've worked out or stuff, I get cramps at night, and then I'll get up in the middle of the night and go take a bunch of mustard, and boy, it gets it gone.
How long does that exactly take before the cramps are gone?
Oh, I mean,
like 15 seconds?
I can feel them leaving the minute, that mustard goes down, and more of that cramp is just easing off. And
do you just put it in a spoon and take it that way?
And what?
Do you just put it in a spoon and just take it down that way?
I take the bottle and just turn it upside down and just give myself a mouthful.
That just goes to show you it doesn't matter how you do it. The delivery system is your choice, but in your mouth, that's where it has to end up, right?
Yes. I tried to tell somebody about this one time. They said, well, I put it right on my leg and it didn't help a bit. I said, no, you got to swallow it.
He would be better off putting it on the leg of a chicken and then eating it.
There you go.
That would be the one way you could put it on the leg and it would work.
I've been told by a physician that rides a 100-mile ride on his bike.
Yeah.
Boy, when that leg cramp starts, they get off that bike and start eating mustard.
Yeah, but you know what else mustard has in it? It has vinegar.
Huh.
It also has garlic. It has water. So I would say it's a synergistic combination, but I love the plan.
Well, that's great.
You don't even know how much mustard I eat. I consume more mustard than probably the average male living in Jacksonville.
Okay.
Did you see how prideful I was and arrogant by stating that fact? But I could eat mustard every single day, and the kids look at me and go, Dad, how can you do that? I just like it.
Yeah, I've got 4 bottles of it sitting in my refrigerator.
Yeah, I think I would consume mustard like other people would consume ketchup.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I like that ketchup. I've only got one bad addiction that I can't seem to get rid of.
What is it?
And that's ice cream.
See, I knew if we talked long enough, the deep, dark secret of your life would finally come out.
Uh-oh.
Well, and you know what? I want to be as good to you as I possibly can, so I'm not going to tell you how to... We're not going to cover all that, but you know what I want to talk you into? Could I talk you into maybe getting ice cream that's made from coconut oil and coconut milk instead of...
Coconut oil.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right, I'm working on a plan, a coconut oil.
Yeah, so we need to write down the first 3, because number 4 and 5, you're not going to remember to do those.
Okay, coconut oil.
So here's what I want you to do. This is just a simple experiment. If you're a man, so I'm just going to make a guess here. I'm going to guess that you probably need about 4 tablespoons a day of coconut oil. Because I want to see if maybe somehow or another you tell me your brain is able to recall information a little bit easier, a little bit better.
Okay. Coconut oil, 4 tablespoons.
4 tablespoons. And next thing. If you're one to make lists, I would write down scholar and athlete. And if you want your brain to have any chance to work better or regain some lost function or restore those neuroplastic connections between your neurons, I would say set your mind that you're going to learn something new every single day and give your brain a chance to grow new neural connections. That's called neuroplasticity. The next thing is I want you to become a great athlete. Have a command of your body. If it doesn't work as well as you want, make it work better, and that's called exercise.
Gotcha.
And there's 1,000 things you can do. I would be happy to go to the Pilates class today or jazzercise and then get you enrolled in there. You may be the only man, but I don't see that as being a problem.
Yeah.
I'm really just making a joke. You don't want to go to yoga class, do you?
I've read about that, but. I've got a great elliptical rider down in my basement.
Well, what I was really going to get to is you can do that, but I want you to do a different exercise every single day.
Oh.
If you just do the same thing over and over again, that doesn't really do anything as far as getting the brain to increase its neural connections, and that's what you need. So let's say today you want to focus on push-ups, and I'm sure what you'll do is you'll just do 20 one-arm push-ups on the right, and then you'll put your right hand behind your back and do 20 on the left. I can't. But do something new every day. And that's one of the, I tell you right now, that's one of the benefits of YouTube. If you looked up exercise, challenging exercises, all you do is just imitate those. Master them. But between exercise And becoming a scholar just meaning you're continually trying to learn something new. You know, I heard something this week. I have never heard anybody else tell me this before. But a gentleman told me that he writes down, over the course of a day, he writes down, what did I learn new today? You know what? I think that's incredible. I just love that. Now, right. The man that said that thought that he was very, very good looking when he weighed, you know, 485 pounds. But his wife would turn to him and say, I can't believe that you thought you were really good looking when you were really that overweight. Because now he's like about 180, you know, 2 or 5 or something like that.
That's awesome.
Anyway, yeah. But it's interesting how the brain works. But I think if there's any memory issues, if you get in the pattern or the habit of making lists, even if you just write down 2 or 3 things that you want to accomplish, every time you accomplish that task or do the very thing that you set out to do, go check it off, because what you're doing is you're retraining your brain chemistry to work and to serve you better. Specifically, you're getting a surge of dopamine every time you check off an accomplishment.
Right.
So that was that word that was new to me. It's called eudaimonia. It means the type of happiness that comes from doing purposeful, good activities.
Yes.
Of course, yes. I kind of thought to myself when the psychiatrist, Dr. Ling, said we should engage in self-reflection, I thought, well, isn't that what Christians do when they go to church and they worship and they take the communion and they pray and they try to help people? Yeah.
Yes, it is. I saw a comment someone made that said the blessings we receive from God are not real blessings until we share them with others.
Well, if you can confess that God has blessed you, I'd say that's a pretty good starting point.
Now, one last thing I've got is, I wrote down a little note here. If we repeat an action 15 times, it can become a habit.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere I got that number 15, 15 times. Oh, you know, like every day you do a certain thing.
Whatever works, yes.
And then you do it again the next day and the next 15 days.
Yeah, this secular psychiatrist, that's what he was saying to beat addiction. You have to actually start doing good things to you. Well, what does it say in Romans chapter 12, verse 21? Do not be overcome by evil, but rather overcome evil with what?
Good.
Yes, and a good is something that you would have to practice. And so if you have to do good 15 times a day, I don't think there's any law against that, is there?
No, it shouldn't.
Yeah, but I agree with you. That's good. You want to establish good patterns and good habits, and by practicing it over and over again, you just naturally get better at it, right?
Yes.
Now, I mean, I know I could be an oversimplifier, but what if you just made purposed in your heart that you were going to say, thank you, I appreciate you, you mean a lot to me. What would happen versus, you know what, you stink.
Yes.
You're not really so fun to be around. I mean, that would just be negative, wouldn't it?
That's right.
Have you ever heard the phrase that you can catch more flies with honey than vinegar?
No,
anyway.
Yes.
Anyway, go ahead with what you wanted to say.
Oh, there's a new way of responding that I just don't understand it. You tell somebody, thank you, and they say, no problem.
Yeah, that's not, but see, the way the brain is wired, why would you respond by telling a person, you are not, okay, if you say thank you to me, I'm really saying, oh, you're not causing me a problem by saying that. That doesn't even register as a way to respond to it. What would you say, and I'm going to give you 2 or 3 options here, what's the best way to respond to someone that says, Bill, thank you for what you did for me?
You're welcome.
There you go. We're going to go with choice number 1. Good job, man.
I'm glad I could help you.
You did.
Or God bless you.
Well, thanks. That meant a lot to me. I appreciate that.
But no problem. Just I don't know where they get it. But anyway.
Well, you know that's the pattern that I've seen. If you go to a restaurant, and let's just say the waitress refills your glass of water or brings you some lemons, and you go, "Hey, thanks for bringing those lemons. That's great. No problem." It's just completely the brain is wired incorrectly or wrong. I'm going to say they need to go to Chick-fil-A, so every response is, my pleasure.
Oh, yes. That's wonderful.
Well, I appreciate your phone call today very much. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
And the coconut oil, 4 tablespoons, was there any other item on that list? I mean, I got the scholar.
Oh, yeah, there is, but I mean, I could talk from now to the end of the day talking about steps you should take, but just work on that.
Coconut oil. All right, thanks.
Okay,
so
thank you. Bye-bye. All right, it would be my pleasure to have you call me on the phone. And if you call and say good morning, Dr. Morgan, I'm not going to say no problem. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
No problem. Wait, that didn't even sound right, does it?
No, it wasn't the right time.
Okay.
No, bad time.
Please forgive me. I thought that I would test it in the real time, and it failed flat, didn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for your phone call.
Say, I would like to backtrack a little bit. Could you spell some of the words that you were talking about this morning?
Yes, ma'am. Let me look them up real quick. Because, okay. I mean, and I'm being honest with you, these were like new terms, but I know you've heard the term hedonistic, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay. The word, and these are the two words that describe happiness, okay? And so the first one is H-E-D.
Okay.
O N.
H E D. Did you say?
It's just like the word hedonistic, but with it's hedon and I A. H E D O N I A.
Okay.
And the second word that describes the type of pleasure and satisfaction that we really, really need to be healthy, I called it eudaimonia, which I could have butchered that, right? And you say, no problem. Okay, the word is spelled. the word is E-U-D-E-M-O-N-I-A, eudaimonia. And I could be saying that wrong or pronouncing it wrong. Anyway, is that what you wanted?
I did. I was recently introduced to a word called protomona. Protomonia. I believe that's what it's called, and it has to do with always thinking that the universe is going to send you good.
Okay.
And it's supposed to be, they call it the antidote to paranoia. And I thought,
well,
that's
a new word for me also.
Yeah, so when you said this, I thought, oh my goodness, this is, you know, we're developing the words, or the endings are all the same.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the whole...
I don't think Job had that conversation about the universe always sending good, did he?
No, it's like you can think the universe into sending you good.
How about we say it differently? And I realize you and I, we probably believe that we're going to have trials and tribulations, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not even going to start to ask you how many trials and tribulations and very uncomfortable circumstances have you had within your family over your lifetime, because there's not enough time in this program to go over those, right?
No, and I wouldn't want to. Thank you.
And I did, when I was traveling recently in a hotel room, I flipped on the TV, which I really don't watch it, but Joel Osteen was on. And I can tell you what, he had nothing negative to say. It was a very, very positive message. But I would say that there are laws of nature that God has set forth that we have to obey, whether we understand them or not. And one of those laws of gravity. And I would say that both you and I are pretty much at peace with how gravity works. We may not understand all the physics of it, but we know about gravity. And I would say there's laws that man has made. I mean, if somebody murders another person, they can state all day long that they did not know that that was wrong, but it's wrong. And I would say also that maybe what I'm referring to, and maybe what you and I are thinking about today, there are maybe spiritual laws, or maybe what I would say principles, that if we abide by them, things are going to go really, really well for us. And I would say not only are they going to go well for us, but we might do a lot better. And I would say one of those laws might be the law of opportunity, which means God causes the sun to rain on the good and the bad, and the sunshine also. And didn't Jesus say that the man that builds his house upon a rock and one chooses to build a house on the sand, well, which one gets washed away? Well, they both had the opportunity to make good decisions on how they wanted to construct their homes. I don't know if they had the same chances, but I think when we abide by these principles, I think the chances are that we're going to get through these difficulties a little bit better than some people that don't understand these principles.
Yes, and I thought it was very interesting. You were saying this has a physiological effect on you also.
Yeah, so just seeking pleasure for the sake of seeking pleasure, and that's what grabbed me by the throat. It wrecks your immune system. It causes your blood pressure to go up. So,
and where's the pleasure society? Everything has to be a pleasure.
I couldn't have said it better. That's all our society. That's the whole world is right there. Is about pleasure, right?
Mm-hmm. And then the gentleman bringing up the verse that says the devil is here to seek and destroy. It kind of feels like our society is in a trap. He's trapped us.
Yeah, but we're the ones that have taken the key to the jail cell and thrown it away.
Right.
That's where I would say that the keys to life are in the Word of God.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the key works for everybody, but there are principles. You've got to do more than just to say, I agree. You actually have to have some action behind that. And it's kind of interesting to me, this book is called Mastering the Addicted Brain. He says the way to get off drugs is, he said, you have to replace drug memories with non-drug memories. And I would say that's a way of retraining. So if you had a brand new baby in your arms that was one day old, do you really just set the child on the floor and say, hey, you want to walk into the bathroom with me while I brush my teeth? No, the baby can't do that. How long does it actually take a baby to learn how to walk?
Well, sometimes 14 months or more.
That's right. And it's okay if it takes 18 months. But, you know, some people like me, I think I learned to walk when I was 10 months, and I proceeded to run into the rodeo arena while the bull almost stomped me and killed me. But I think there was a rodeo clown that saved my life. That's been my only good experience with clowns. Actually, you can't see my hand. I'm starting to shake right now thinking about clowns.
Oh, no. I think there's a word for that.
Wait, am I causing anxiety? Wait a second. Listen to my breathing.
Yeah, really?
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I just thought those words were very interesting since I had just been introduced to this other word. And
Know what I'm going to do when you get off the phone? Well, actually, after I complete the program, I'm going to get on my phone and look up in the dictionary what prodemonia. See, you've already piqued my interest, so thank you.
It's the antidote to paranoia. That was the statement that I heard.
Well, and I realize paranoia can occur on multiple levels, everywhere from maybe mild to very severe. What would you say is the definition of paranoia?
Oh,
just a simple difference.
Thinking the world is all against you. Everybody's against you. Everything's against you.
Well, you know, I kind of think that's true when it comes to Satan. I mean, he's not for us.
Right.
Anyway, Satan's
against us. Right, but you can go to seed on it, too. So.
Yeah, yeah. No, I thank you for your phone call. You made my day. Have a good day, ma'am.
Think nothing of it.
Okay. No problem.
Bye. No problem.
Thanks, bye. See, I've already run that in the ground. The number here at the station, there is a phone line officially open at 903-586-5257. And yes, I like to talk about any substance or remedy or procedure that can restore you to good working order. Good morning. Thanks for your phone call.
Good morning.
How are you?
Well, doing pretty well. It's a beautiful morning, and I've just recently started having sounds in my ear, sort of, I guess you can say it sounds like there's ball bearings in there, or maybe static. It's something like that.
How long?
Well, it's only been about 4 or 5 days.
Is there any chance you have any issues with your sinuses or your nose or any sinus congestion?
I don't think so. I've had some in the past. It's been minor. But, yeah, it's been pretty minor. Just prior to this, I did have some issues with... I've had this problem with, at times where I get, like, shadows in my eyes. You see, like, cones and triangles, and there's almost like a darkening of vision.
Now, have you been to an eye doctor to pursue that?
You know, I've mentioned it, and I don't think that there's been a big...
You mean you mentioned it to your dentist, or did you mention it to an eye doctor?
Well, no, not to my dentist, but no, it's the eye doctor.
No, I was just joking. But you went to the eye doctor, and you mentioned it to him, right? Or her?
Yeah, I think this has been going on for like maybe six years, and I've never really had any...
Well, just in simplicity, would you say that your vision is worsening? I mean, this is enough. This is enough that you're concerned about it, right?
Right. I'm not. Is it worsening? It might be getting a little worse. I don't know.
Did your mother or father have any issues similar to this at all with their ears or their eyes?
No.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm very good at speculating. I could guess all day long as to what is, but let's talk about the ears first. All right.
Right.
I mean, obviously, if you have these symptoms, like there's ball bearings in your ears or a static, sound, and your attention is drawn to it, and let's just say it's nothing more than just an annoyance right now, but still, this is the way that God has designed the body to kind of warn us and alert us to give us a clue something's not working right. I think it's just a matter of how you interpret these things. Some people, when the temperature on their car goes up to the red line, they say, oh, nothing to worry about. It does that all the time. Well, maybe it does. But maybe the engine's about to blow up. But at least you have a chance to go in, you know, maybe I should figure out if I have any radiator fluid or what was all that fluorescent green stuff in my driveway this morning. Well, it's not good to... So when you have symptoms... It's akin to a piece of machinery having a warning light go off saying, you better check this so further damage doesn't take place. And so there's several things that you can do. If you haven't had this long-standing trouble with your ears, one simple technique is just getting either ear oil or castor oil and putting it in your ears and seeing if that calms it down or corrects the inflammation or resolves the circulatory issue. Castor oil is very, very good stuff for trying to improve lymphatic flow and circulation. And your lymphatic system, that is the very system that's interested in keeping every system squeaky clean, including the eyes. See, I'm probably a little bit nutty about this because I always think to myself, if you're seeing some unusual something in your eyes, I always look at the kidneys. You don't by chance have high blood pressure, do you?
No, I don't.
You're not taking any medications at all, right?
Nothing.
Perfect. The drugs that are probably most famous for causing annoying ear sounds would be anti-inflammatory or over-the-counter painkillers. If you said Aleve or Advil or Tylenol or ibuprofen or aspirin, I'd be on board with that right there. Because to some people, even a baby aspirin can cause weird sounds in the ears. But if you're visual field, if you feel like your vision's getting darker and your ears are starting to make this, there's a couple things that I would have you just consider. Is there any chance that in your immediate blood relatives anybody has any circulatory issues? And if you don't know that, if you were to go to a doctor and they did just a very simple blood test called HCT or hematocrit. It's just part of a CBC. I think they charge, $8 to do that? But if you had a hematocrit that comes in at 46, I would say, well, let's look at this for what it is. It shows that your blood's quite a bit thicker than what it should be. So, I mean, at least go and get some clues. So often, the thing that I'm doing is I'm not working on that which is seen. I'm working on that which is not seen. And that's what you're telling me right now. I'm calling Dr. Morgan because I can't see anything wrong. I just have these clues and I have these symptoms. Something's not working right. So what's unseen about this? And so we're trying to investigate. But you could put castor oil in your ears and you could tell me if there's an improvement. I mean, I'm a fan of candling the ears. I don't have to have anybody agree with me on that, but I believe enough in it that I probably have 50 at the house in case I want to use them on the kids. And plus, it was a lot cheaper buying them in bulk. And so the eye issue, that kind of concerns me, though.
Well, but this has been kind of a problem that is, I guess you can say, it has a cycle up. Something will happen maybe 2-3 months later, and then it'll happen again. And this particular time, it wasn't severe. It was actually rather negligence, rather negligible.
Right.
But
not because of negligence.
I hope not.
No. I was joking about that. No, you're taking good care. But still, you know, the way that I want to interpret your words is that you have moments that it's not so bad, and maybe you don't even notice any problem with your eyes. But it's kind of waxing and waning. But see, the way that I really want to think about that is I want to say to myself, you see, Roy, his body is able to make corrections and to heal and to make it right. And there's other times where maybe his circumstances have changed, and it could be because of diet or because of stress or nutrient deficiency that he can't do so well. But that just goes to prove that your body is a healing organism by God's design. It's trying to right the ship or correct the course that you're on. But a lot of times with the eyes, I am a huge fan of the mineral zinc. But I think you might want to go to a doctor and at least have this checked more thoroughly. And if you're in front of a doctor and you say, this is what I'm having, if the doctor just says, interesting, and moves on, you might just say, could we have a timeout here? Do you have any ideas? If he doesn't have any, or she doesn't have any ideas, then you might have to move on to somebody else that has more ideas. But if I had my way, I don't want you to become blind like Helen Keller. I just soon you become... I want you to have your eyes to see and your ears to hear.
Yes.
So there's something going on internally. It's just a matter of trying to find out what that is. The other thing that I like is I'm a real fan. If you want to try to keep your blood clean, one of the simplest things you can do is just drink more water with lemon in it. And that's just a very gentle scrubber of the liver and the kidneys. But anytime there's an eye issue, I always look to the kidneys. And so there's a simple blood test that your doctor can order. It's called GFR. That stands for glomerular filtration rate. It's a very accurate test for kidney function. And I would just kind of boldly say that if that number is 95 and above, you're in great shape. But if it's below 95, then you've got kidney damage. If it's below 60, you've got stage 1 kidney failure. Keep going lower and lower. If it's at 15, they'll have to put you on renal dialysis. So the kidneys just don't give off a lot of information when they lose their efficiency. But I think it'd be probably good for you to go to your doctor and say, could you just do a checkup and tell me if there's anything to this? And you might end up being the wisest man of all time. That might actually be one definition of wisdom, is trying to think it through and get to it before it develops into something worse. So I would recommend you go to a doctor.
Good deal.
Let me know how it works out. I'm already chomping at the bit to find out what your lab values say.
Okay.
Good. Well, I appreciate your phone call, buddy.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You notice I didn't ask him, what are you eating? How physically fit are you? Sometimes those interpretations are hard to, talk about on the radio. If you want to join me on the radio, there is a phone line open at 903-586-5257. Well, good morning. Well, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. How are you this fine morning?
Did you just bless me?
Yes, of course.
Oh, well, thank you.
Aren't we to bless you one another?
You are awesome. Thanks for your blessing.
You're welcome. Listen, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to get off and listen to you. What can you do for hernia at the navel, the belly button?
Well, how big is it?
I'm not really sure, but it's gotten to be pretty good size.
Okay.
I'm wanting to hit it off. They're wanting to do surgery. I don't want surgery.
All right. I'll tell you how to do it. Did you want to hang up, or do you want me to say on what?
I can hang up. That's no problem.
Okay. Well, okay. Thanks for your phone call.
No, thank you.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off too soon, ma'am. All right. You realize this is radio. I can't actually see and examine an umbilical hernia or navel hernia or belly button, but it's there. And so surgery is what's recommended. Maybe one thing I'd have you do is there's quite a few books written on the topic, so you may just get on the website, Amazon.com. You probably have not ever heard of that before. To best of my knowledge, I may be one of the few people that's ever gotten on Amazon and ordered a book before. Probably no one's ever really heard of it until now. So maybe my seven listeners will get on Amazon. No, but what you do is get on Amazon.com, and they have several categories, of course, and you can click on the one called books. And then you might just type in natural ways to heal a hernia. And if I'm not mistaken, one of the conditions that women face, you know, as a result of pregnancy is a condition called diastasis recti, where that linea alba, which is the white line that runs down the middle of between the rectus abdominis or your abs, it just tears and splits apart, and you can have your intestines kind of bulge through it. Well, that's a hernia right there. And isn't it interesting that the source of life for a baby is just right there? That's the feeding and the breathing tube. That umbilical cord is crazy good stuff, isn't it? But you might look up the name Katie Bowman, because she has a lot of information she's written about how to correct that diastasis recti and hernias also. And I haven't pursued this myself, but I know what I would do. I'd probably get on YouTube and look up corrective exercises for hernias, because I realize there's probably some bad stuff on YouTube, but there's a whole bunch of good stuff also, and just having to separate the wheat from the chaff. So maybe you could start studying that topic, since at all costs you want to avoid surgery if you don't have to have it. And I'm definitely all for that. I'm very biased that way. But then again, if you need a hernia repair, then you need one. So look that up. Hopefully you'll find some pretty good insight. But to make a long story short, yes, there are several corrective exercises that I don't know that I could explain easily on the air. But if I could get on the floor right now and demonstrate them to you, but there's no camera in here. Thank the good Lord there's no camera in here. I think my hair is sticking out every different direction from wearing a ski cap this morning, since it was only 21 degrees. I have had a really good time being with you. I hope on some way I've been able to help you. I know this helps me. Any time that I can reinforce and learn and call everything for what it is, I think that's good. We just have to do that in our lives, don't we? My blessings. I pray that God will bless you today, and that you will set your mind like flint, that you're going to try to improve your health.